Hello, Gallatin Valley. You are listening to KGBM Gallatin Valley Community Radio on 95.9 FM, Bozeman, Montana, and streaming at kgbm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. As I record today, I am sitting at the boat launch on the Missouri River in the Headwaters State Park. I just watched a cormorant fly up the river, and I've seen him do this before. He'll land, and then he will float downstream. Yep, here he comes. He is such a majestic-looking bird. In a few minutes, we'll be playing a recent episode of Desert Oracle Radio, and it's a good one. But first, let's catch up. I hope you've been able to enjoy the mild days this week. I saw our first hummingbird of the year yesterday. Time to hang the nectar feeders. Calliope hummingbirds are always the first hummingbirds to show up at our house. Calliopes are the smallest North American hummingbirds, and they migrate up to 5,500 miles. Goodness, that's amazing. Their nest is camouflaged to match the environment, so it might look like a pine cone on a conifer, or even a knot on an aspen tree. Another small yet mighty bird, the ruby-crowned kinglet, has been joining the daily chorus in our backyard, too. Looking ahead to this week, May 8th every year is World Donkey Day, celebrating their stoic spirit and individual charm. Evidence shows they've been working alongside humans since 4000 BCE. I wish my allergies would let me have one, but well. May 8th is also Sacagawea Audubon's annual meeting and potluck at Hope Lutheran Church. If you go in person, the potluck starts at 6 and the meeting starts at 7. You can also register to attend online at their website, sacagaweaaudubon.org. Now, if you've never been to one of these things, I highly recommend it. The food is great. I think that the organization is going to provide the main dish, and then they encourage people to bring a side dish. You are going to find out about what is going on with Sacagawea. You will talk to other people that love birds, and they are just a priceless event. So if you can go, please join them. And our friends at Montana Native Plant Society have some events coming up around the state. On Thursday, May 11th, they have Migrations and Springtime Budding, a walk at Creston, Montana, from 8 to 11 in the morning. The phone number where you can get more information about that is 406-837-3837, and you'll be talking to Kathy. On Saturday, May 13th, there's a spring barbecue at Sydney from 12 to 4. You can get more information and reserve a space there for yourself with talking to Fraser Watson at 703-509-0152. And Sunday, May 14th, Mother's Day, there's a wildflower walk with Yaak Valley Forest Council in Troy at 10 a.m. And for that one, you register with wildmontana.org, look at their events, and get your name on the register. Now, on a more serious note, I missed saying something in last week's show, so I'm going to talk about it now. May 5th has officially been declared National Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Awareness Day, and Native communities and organizations across the nation gathered to draw attention to the crisis and honor those who have been impacted the most. The Office for Victims of Crime reports that Indigenous persons experience disproportionately high rates of violence and, relatedly, are reported missing or are murdered at high rates. I hope you were able to support the day where you live, and remember, you can call 888-373-7888 or text the word HELP to 233 733 if you suspect someone is being used in human trafficking. DHS.gov has more information on the definition and signs of human trafficking. Again, those numbers are the Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888 or text the word HELP to 233-733. Stay safe. Okay, now it's time for the Desert Oracle Radio episode that was first aired Friday, May 2nd, 2023. Titled The Nature of Color and Vision. It was produced, as always, by Ken Lane. This one takes us on a journey of science, the number 7, and speculation that begins with the waxing moon in the constellation of Leo and ends with a poem about Venus by Robert Hunter. Hey, is it raining as you listen to this? Have you seen a rainbow lately? Well, enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. The waxing moon is moving through the constellation of Leo. Mars is fading in the night sky. And Venus hangs heavy in the west. Venus seems enormous right now, especially late at night. Low over our western mountains. From my vantage point, it sets in the San Bernardino Mountains about 15 degrees northwest of San Gorgonio, which is still crowned with deep snow as we enter the merry month of May. And meanwhile, upon the desert floor, and splashed brightly up the desert hillsides, there are wondrous carpets of yellow and orange and violet wildflowers. The nights are still cool, still cool and fine, and the days now in the 80s, still mild. The narrow jackrabbit trails I prefer barely discernible through knee-high stands of fiddle neck and great clumps of chia and mallow. The saturated color of the desert bluebells is reaching a violet perfection in these days of middle spring. Now, if you look up the desert bluebell, the flowers are described as blue or purple. Purple is a mix of blue and red, while violet has its own place on the color spectrum. The final visible color before ultraviolet. the great alchemist and astrologer Isaac Newton divided the visible spectrum of color into seven. Seven colors, because of the importance of the mystical number of seven. There's red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. It was the year of 1666 when Newton conducted his now famous experiment with the prism and natural sunlight. So the colors he divided into seven because of the mystical significance of that number. Some people still argue that blue and indigo could or should be contained within a single color. Newton chose the word spectrum for equally esoteric reasons. Spectrum comes from the Latin meaning apparition, as in the visual appearance of a spirit, a mystical vision, a specter. From the same root that gives us specs as a pair of eyeglasses, or the specifications for you to see to understand. From spectio in Latin, to observe, to look, to see. Skeptical comes from the ancient Greek version of the same Proto-Indo-European word, spec. One of Newton's great works, the book Optics, became the basis for many sciences and industries of today, such as the division of the electromagnetic spectrum from ionizing radiation to visible light to the radio waves used to carry this program to you. Whether over the waves of terrestrial radio's frequency modulation band or the cell phones and Wi-Fi you use to listen to a podcast. Scottish scientist James Clerk Maxwell, who proposed the existence of radio waves on the far end of Newton's color spectrum. In Maxwell's great work of 1865, A Dynamical Theory of the Electromagnetic Field, he formed the classical theory of electromagnetic radiation. That electricity and magnetism and light itself was all a part of this mostly invisible spectrum. The radio waves he proposed were soon harnessed by Heinrich Hertz. Just 20 years later, Hertz is in the rental car company. That's not true. Hertz is in the measurement unit of frequency. With one hertz equal to one cycle, Wi-Fi operates at 2.4 and 5 gigahertz. Said Heinrich Hertz of James Clerk Maxwell's equations, "It is impossible to study this wonderful theory without feeling as if the mathematical equations had an independent life and intelligence of their own. as if they were wiser than ourselves. Indeed, wiser than their discoverer. As if they gave forth more than he put into them. Well, radio followed, as did radar and the exploitation of radiation, along with all the modern physics of relativity and quantum mechanics and all that. And until the 20th century, radio to transmit sound was called Hertzian waves. James Clerk Maxwell accomplished so much in his short life of 48 years that it seems impossible for a mere mortal. He was a fine poet, greatly influenced by his countryman Robert Burns. And there are a dozen disciplines that Maxwell can rightly be called the father of. From thermodynamics to control theory to the very concept of the singularity. Maxwell had his dramatic religious conversion experience at Cambridge when he was a student. And he remained an evangelical Christian and a practicing Presbyterian to his last bodily breath, becoming an elder of the Church of Scotland later in his too brief life. He was a member of a group called the Apostles at Cambridge, a group of rigorously intellectual young people who maintained the importance of a mystical and spiritual life. Another apostle at the time, and a great influence on Maxwell's personal thinking, was Frederick Denison Maurice, F.D. Maurice, today regarded as a principal founder of Christian socialism. Both saw the tyranny of the capitalist industrial revolution, even as they created many of the tools that would be used to exploit so much of the natural world, from radio waves to humanity itself. Maxwell was, like Newton, a constant investigator into the nature of color and vision, which ultimately resulted in the first color photograph, created by Maxwell in 1861 with Thomas Sutton, the inventor of the single-lens reflex camera. Maxwell made these three filters using the red-green-blue system that your phone or computer still uses today, the RGB color palette of online pictures. That first color picture shows a ribbon of Scottish tartan. And you can see it today in person if you want. Just go to 14 India Street in Edinburgh, where Maxwell was born and where a small museum honors his life's work. One of his lasting riddles is known today as Maxwell's Demon. This intelligence, more the Greek concept of a daimon than the sulfurous demon of Western Christianity, controls physics with its thoughts, with its intention. And it was a thought experiment by Maxwell. A thought experiment about information becoming energy. in the case of Maxwell's demon, an intelligent entity allows hotter or colder molecules on either side of his otherwise open vessel. Based on the demon's ability to know all molecules and decide their path. Maxwell writes, he will thus, without expenditure of work, raise the temperature of portion B and lower that of portion A, in contradiction to the second law of thermodynamics. It was another century and a half before researchers managed to make it happen. As the journal Nature reported on 14 November 2010 under the headline, Demonic Device Converts Information to Energy, with the subhead, Experiment Inspired by a Paradox Tempts a Bead Uphill. Says the article by Zia Murali. The laws of physics say that you can't get energy for nothing. Worse still, you will always get out of a system less energy than you put in. But a nanoscale experiment inspired by a 19th century paradox that seemed to break those laws now shows that you can generate energy from information. Physicist Masaki Sano and his colleagues at the University of Tokyo have demonstrated that a bead can be coaxed up a spiral staircase without any energy being directly transferred to the bead to push it upwards. Instead, it is persuaded along its route by a series of judiciously timed decisions to change the height of the steps around it, based on information about the bead's position. In this sense, quote, information is being converted to energy, says Sano. The work is published by Nature Physics today. This is from James Clerk Maxwell himself, his own pen. Happy is the man who can recognize in the work of today a connected portion of the work of life and an embodiment of the work of eternity. The foundations of his confidence are unchangeable, for he has been made a partaker of infinity. He strenuously works out his daily enterprises because the present is given him for a possession. Thus ought man to be an impersonation of the divine process of nature, and to show forth the union of the infinite with the finite. Knowing that time is a mystery which man cannot endure to contemplate until the eternal truth enlighten it. Well, we were talking about planets, and when talking about James Clerk Maxwell, we really should be talking about Saturn. because it was Maxwell who proposed that Saturn's rings were not solid circular rings, as was commonly believed by astronomers of the time, but by countless individual particles in various stages of change, visible even in the telescopes of the mid-19th century. Cassini space probe paid special attention to the space between rings known as Maxwell's Gap, one of several large gaps between the bands of rings visible from Earth through even a halfway decent telescope. And if you are an early riser, you can see Saturn in the morning sky to the east before dawn, low in the southeastern sky this week. But we were looking at Venus tonight initially. That striking and very bright planetary neighbor setting behind the western mountains about now, depending on your view of the moment. When you live under such an immense living sky, it's easy to see and feel why the movements of the planets have played such an immense part in humanity's culture. It's religion and philosophies and mythologies and sciences. All the great arts of our species. Wrote D.H. Lawrence. The cosmos is a vast living body of which we are still part. The sun is a great heart whose tremors run through our smallest veins. The moon is a great nerve center from which we quiver forever. Who knows the power that Saturn has over us, or Venus? But it is a vital power, rippling exquisitely through us all the time. You know, our oldest human-made monuments and trinkets point to the stars, to the sun and the moon and the five visible planets, the source of our sacred number seven. The month, the phases of the moon, divide into 4 weeks of seven. It is the number of completion and fulfillment in the Old Testament and New, as it was for civilizations of the Tigris and Euphrates, from whence came Abraham, that famed cattle rustler and father of three religions. The seventh day is the day of rest, or it was before late capitalism anyway. The seventh year is when the bondsmen and women must be freed, when the debts must be forgiven, when the cultivated land must be left fallow. There are seven lamps on the menorah. Those who sin against nature are punished sevenfold. So spake the Lord. And Leonard Cohen of the Priestley tribe was on the side of snake eyes. I'm on the side that's always lost, against the side of heaven. I'm on the side of snake eyes tossed, against the side of heaven. Venus, who moved this month from Taurus into Gemini, is our closest planetary neighbor, the morning star and the evening star, the Lightbringer. Lucifer, in the language of ancient Rome, Phosphorus in ancient Greece, Ninsiana in ancient Sumer. Or as Robert Hunter wrote a half century ago, counting stars by candlelight, all are dim but one is bright, the spiral light of Venus, rising first and shining best. Isaacs and across the great Mojave Wilderness. You've been listening to Desert Oracle Radio with Fine New Soundscapes tonight by our own musical apostle, Red, Blue, Black, Silver. I'm your host, Ken Lane. If you're listening on the radio, then you know where we broadcast on Friday nights. 10 p.m. on KCDZ 107.7 on the frequency modulation band, SFM, in the Mojave High Desert. You can hear us on KZMU and Moab on Saturday nights, 9 o'clock. And on about another dozen fine community radio stations around the United States. If you find yourself in the deserts during this month of mild weather and wildflowers, don't forget your allergy pills and your sinus irrigation system and all that. Everything does smell so very good right now, though. I'll take the itchy eyes at night if I can sit on a low boulder in a sandy wash with wildflowers up to my ears. The bees so heavy with pollen that they can barely make it to the next bloom. Thanks for listening to Desert Oracle Radio. And good night from the voice of the desert.
Wow, that discussion about color got me thinking about all the waves and particles and what happens when they hit the eye if one has the gift of sight. And when I hear the word frequency, I think about sound, too. Here's a question. What do Franz Liszt, Duke Ellington, Billie Eilish, Marilyn Monroe, Vincent van Gogh, Vladimir Nabokov, and Pharrell Williams have in common with Tori Amos and Lorde? Did you guess synesthesia? I wondered what it is like to experience this condition. There is quite a lot on the web about this way of sensing things. One of my favorites is a 2017 TED Talk featuring Annie Dickinson entitled Seeing Sound, How Synesthesia Can Change Our Thinking. I'll let her tell you about it.
I have a neurological condition. And it's one that affects about 4% of the general population. It's a condition where two or more senses of the brain are crossed. The stimulation of one sensory pathway involuntarily leads to the stimulation of another, which can create some unique perceptions of the world for the affected person. It's called synesthesia, meaning a blending of the senses. People who have synesthesia are known as synesthetes. For synesthete, the sound of a passing car can create the taste of cherries, and the touch of a cotton blanket can create a sound like falling rain. While there are many different types of synesthesia, my particular synesthesia is a connection of sound and color, often referred to as chromesthesia. Colors cause me to hear sound, and sound causes me to see color. For example, in talking to you right now, I can see a cloud of violet-purple appear right about here, in my field of vision. Because the sound of my voice causes me to see purple, that purple cloud is present every time I use my speaking voice. Every one of your voices has a unique color as well. Ms. Elizabeth Rath, the MC of this event, has a voice that is turquoise blue. Objects that make noise also produce a color. If I snap my fingers, there's a cloud of fuchsia that appears and disappears almost as quickly as it came. While similar pitches share the same color, the timbre of the sound can slightly alter the shade and intensity of the color cloud that I see. If you think that this might become distracting or overwhelming at times, you would be right. I have learned to embrace my synesthesia, and I am more willing to talk about it with others. As I learned more about myself, I realized that I could use synesthesia to understand more about those around me. In people that I know well, I have noticed that the color of their voice can change just slightly based on how they are feeling. If a person is getting sick, feeling overly stressed, or just not feeling like themselves, I can often perceive this based on a change in their voice color. When my dad is just about to get a cold, his normally bright shade of robin's egg blue changes to a much darker shade of blue. And one time at work, I could sense that my coworker was on the verge of a panic attack, and I encouraged her to take a break to head it off. This isn't some sort of magical ability or anything. I've simply learned that the more I listen to a person, the more I'm able to understand about them. Think about that for a minute. The more I listen to a person, the more I'm able to understand about them. For the past few minutes, you have been listening to my voice. You have listened to me describe a condition that you may or may not have heard of before. I acknowledge that I cannot prove to you that synesthesia even exists, or even that I do indeed have it. And yet, I am betting that you believe I am telling you the truth about how I perceive the world. You came today with an open mind, ready to experience something new. And you allowed me to speak. And I shared my thoughts and experiences. Our society seems to be one in which we think we are all experts. The tendency is to quickly insist that our ideas, opinions, and perspectives are the only ones that are valid. The comment section of a YouTube video reveals that it only takes about 30 seconds for an individual to completely understand what is going on in a video, and they can make authoritative and sweeping judgments about a video's content, many of which appear to be false after a few minutes of research. In short, anything that does not line up with our personal experiences or our vantage point is often dismissed as untrue or fabricated. But you did not do that today. You came with an open mind and allowed me to speak. In order to experience the full diversity and color of our society, we must give people the chance to speak, and to speak often. We must learn to listen with an open mind and give consistent voice to those around us. Synesthesia has taught me that the world is bigger than any one person's experiences. Conflicting perceptions do not have to lead to battles which strike down one view and declare another victorious, as seen in so many posts on social media. How much less conflict would there be, and how much different would our news feeds look if we began with our minds open to the idea that another's viewpoint, while different, is equally true and equally real? If we went about our daily interactions with the intention of keeping an open mind to all ideas, opinions, and viewpoints, then I believe we have the potential to better our communities and better our society. How much less conflict would there be if we allowed others to live in their truth? By admitting that the human experience has the potential to range far beyond what we understand or perceive, we have waded into a world that is alive with color. If you can accept my experiences with synesthesia as ones that are true and valid, regardless of never experiencing them yourself or possibly not even understanding them, then surely you can learn to accept ideas, opinions, and viewpoints of everybody, regardless of whether or not you agree with them. Wouldn't it make sense to move forward away from the darkness of non-acceptance? And how fitting would it be if, moving forward, we began with the acceptance of a condition as colorful and as unique as synesthesia?
I just love Annie's closing message, and I hope we can all take it to heart. Do you know anyone that is a synesthete? 4% of the population is. And researchers suspect that infants may experience this crosstalk of the senses too, so maybe each of us at least began with such a gift. Well, it's getting to be that time to wrap this up. As always, Gallatin Valley, thank you for listening. The number where you can reach me to leave suggestions or comments, or better yet, share your stories, is 406-404-6246. Next week, I hope to be talking about mothers. Do you have a story about yours? Again, that number is 406-404-6246. And you can hear this show at 7 p.m. Sundays and again at 9 a.m. Mondays on KGBM 95.9 FM or stream it live on KGBM.org. Today, I thank several talented people for their music to take us out. MC Yogi, The Sky, Yatao and Yalti Martin have created these sounds. As I ponder particles and waves, I wave goodbye till next week. My heart beats, my brain waves have frequencies. Am I a wave? Are we all waves?
Listen.